Ezekiel chapter 34. And the word of Yahweh came unto me, saying, Son of man, prophesy against the shepherds of Israel, prophesy and say unto them, Thus saith Yahweh God unto the shepherds, Woe be to the shepherds of Israel that do feed themselves. Should not the shepherds feed the flocks? Ye eat the fat, and ye clothe you with the wool. Ye kill them that are fed, but ye feed not the flock. The diseased have ye not strengthened, neither have ye healed that which was sick, neither have ye bound up that which was broken, neither have ye brought again that which was driven away, neither have ye sought that which was lost, but with force and with cruelty have ye ruled them. And they were scattered, because there is no shepherd, and they became meat to all the beasts of the field when they were scattered. My sheep wandered through all the mountains and upon every high hill, yea. My flock was scattered upon all the face of the earth, and none did search or seek after them. Therefore, ye shepherds, hear the word of Yahweh. As I live, saith Yahweh God, surely because my flock became a prey, and my flock became meat to every beast of the field, because there was no shepherd, neither did my shepherds search for my flock, but the shepherds fed themselves and fed not my flock. Therefore, O ye shepherds, hear the word of Yahweh. Thus saith Yahweh God, Behold, I am against the shepherds, and I will require my flock at their hand, and cause them to cease from feeding the flock. Neither shall the shepherds feed themselves any more, for I will deliver my flock from their mouth, that they may not be meat for them. For thus saith Yahweh God, Behold, I, even I, will both search my sheep and seek them out.
Well, I mean, when Christ says in John chapter 10, I am the good shepherd, you got to put that right together with this.
And it's so profound once you understand that the underlying history that this is one of, to me, it's one of the clinching moments of scripture. In the ancient world, when the hell did the Jews ever wander over every mountain, right? Meaning all the other nations. When have the Jews ever been a colonizing people? Never. Who are these people? Where are they? We should be able to find them. This is Ezekiel speaking about these people that wandered over every mountain in the past tense. Yet you don't find Jews outside of first century Palestine and later anywhere in the ancient world.
And that my sheep hear my voice, that's they do hear it in a spiritual sense, but it's also as a leader, because the sheep never truly follow their unrighteous rulers. You know, he said something like, all that have come before me were thieves and robbers. You know, mm-hmm. the sheep never truly followed those people, but they will truly follow Christ, because they all followed him and flocked towards him.
Right.
So that's what I think of. All right. As a shepherd seeketh out his flock in the day that he is among his sheep that are scattered, so will I seek out my sheep, and will deliver them out of all places where they have been scattered in the cloudy and dark day. And I will bring them out from the people, and gather them from the countries, and will bring them to their own land, and feed them upon the mountains of Israel by the rivers, and in all the inhabited places of the country. I will feed them in good pasture, and upon the high mountains of Israel shall their fold be. There shall they lie in a good fold, and in a fat pasture shall they feed upon the mountains of Israel. I will feed my flock, and I will cause them to lie down, saith Yahweh God. I will seek that which was lost, and bring again that which was driven away, and will bind up that which was broken, and will strengthen that which was sick. But I will destroy the fat and the strong. I will feed them with judgment. And as for you, O my flock, thus saith Yahweh God, Behold, I judge between cattle and cattle, between the rams and the he-goats. Seemeth it a small thing unto you to have eaten up the good pasture? But ye must tread down with your feet the residue of your pastures, and to have drunk of the deep waters, but ye must foul the residue with your feet. And as for my flock, they eat that which ye have trodden with your feet, and they drink that which ye have fouled with your feet. Therefore, thus saith Yahweh God unto them, Behold, I, even I, will judge between the fat cattle and the lean cattle, because ye have thrust with side and with shoulder, and pushed all the diseased with your horns, till ye have scattered them abroad. Therefore will I save my flock, and they shall no more be a prey, and I will judge between cattle and cattle, and I will set up one shepherd over them, and he shall feed them, even my servant David, he shall feed them, and he shall be their shepherd, and I, Yahweh, will be their God, and my servant David a prince among them. I, Yahweh, have spoken it, and I will make with them a covenant of peace, and will cause the evil beast to cease out of the land, and they shall dwell safely in the wilderness and sleep in the woods.
Shouldn't that say in the bush, Joe?
Yep. Maybe.
This is the, yeah, you know, to me, this is all a premonition of the gospel of Christ when it came to Europe, the woman in the wilderness and all that. It all like goes together with the language used in the New Testament in John chapter 10, in Revelation chapter 12, in Jeremiah chapter 31, the woman that what was in the wilderness found mercy in the wilderness. It's all one consistent narrative that proves the identity of the children of Israel is anything but those Jews. It really does. And I don't know how you could be a Joel Osteen or one of these Kenneth Copeland or one of these other mega rich quote unquote pastors and ever read Ezekiel chapter 34 and not just want to go kill yourself. I really don't know, man. They're definitely the fat cattle and the pastors that have reaped up treasures unto themselves. And this whole chapter just condemns people like that to such a point that I don't know how you could live with yourself reading this chapter. I really don't. And being a Joel Osteen living in a $50 million mansion, I don't get it.
Another thing I think is in this society, while these non-whites are feeding on God's holy mountain, you know, feeding on us, all we get is the residue. And that's what it's talking about here, like residue that they're fouling up. You know, we don't even have any, you know, they're fouling up our waters and everything like that.
Right.
You know, these evil beasts, Bill, you know, did Yahweh create evil beasts? Because at verse 25, it says, and I will make a covenant of peace with them and will cause the evil beast to cease out of the land. You know, could those evil beasts be creatures Yahweh made?
Yeah, right. No, they can't be, because otherwise he would force them into obedience, right? In other words, he's just going to cause them to cease out of the land. So they're not part of the covenant. When the people accept him, the evil beast will be caused to cease out of the land, period. When the sheep accept God, then the evil beast will cease out of the land. That's how I read that.
Yeah, the Indians, the Asians, the Jews, all of them.
The niggers, the Arabs, the kings. Yeah, the palmer worm, the caterpillar, the cankerworm, the locust.
26.
The bad fish, too. Like, where'd the bad fish come from? Where'd the evil beast come from? God, did God make anything evil or bad? Sorry, David, go ahead.
In 26, it's describing the hills. Would that hill be Jerusalem? Is he describing the city?
No, I think the hill is the people.
Okay.
Zion.
Yeah, because it is talking about Israel at the end specifically. That's why I thought maybe it was describing the city as opposed to the rest of everything else.
Zion is his hill, and that represents the people of Israel themselves. I mean, Zion was only one hill in Jerusalem out of several, but the name was taken to describe his people for one reason or another.
Yeah, no, sorry. I meant the allegorical city from Revelation.
That city is also the people of God.
Yeah, but is this 26 describing the city? That city?
Well, in both cases, the hill, the city, they're allegories for the people.
The city of God is the people. The holy city that comes down from heaven. It's a people. He marries the bride of the Lamb is the holy city coming down from heaven. Well, that's the people. Because God's wife is the people.
Maybe I didn't elaborate on it enough, but I noted in my Revelation commentary that that word polis in Greek often referred to the body of the people, not to the geographical city.
Yeah. No, you did.
All right, y'all want me to continue on? Any other comments?
Well, just that that servant David, of course, the historical David was dead 300 years by this time, almost. And my servant David is just a type. David was a type for Christ. So David here is a reference for Christ.
There definitely are types in the Bible. That's definitely a thing.
Yeah. Yeah. That type specifically is mentioned many times.
Yeah, I mean, even Judeo-Christians understand a lot of that. But they just don't get all the types in the Bible.
Yeah.
And they think that God loves niggers. Aside from a few other shortcomings. I'm sorry. I think in contrast to the sheep are already wandered over every mountain. It's already done. And now in Ezekiel chapter 35, it turns to Esau. And it will identify Esau as having taken over these two lands, meaning Israel and Judah. There's no other common sense explanation of that, where we should understand that by the New Testament, the preponderance of those Judeans were actually Esau. I mean, it's pretty simple. And Flavius Josephus, his historical narratives support that fully.
Yeah, I see what you're saying, but this is a narrative of two different people. You've got 34 is our narrative, and then 35 will be
their narrative. Right.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'm gonna read verse 26.
Even 36 goes into this. 36 is still in this thing about Esau, but 35 is very important in that respect, yes.
And I will make them and the places round about my hill a blessing, and I will cause the shower to come down in his season. There shall be showers of blessing, and the tree of the field shall yield her fruit, and the earth shall yield her increase, and they shall be safe in their land, and shall know that I am Yahweh. When I have broken the bands of their yoke and delivered them out of the hand of those that served themselves of them, and they shall no more be a prey to the heathen, neither shall the beast of the land devour them, but they shall dwell safely, and none shall make them afraid. And I will raise up for them a plant of renown, and they shall be no more consumed with hunger in the land, neither bear the shame of the heathen any more. Thus shall they know that I, Yahweh, their God, am with them, and that they, even the house of Israel, are my people, saith Yahweh God. And ye, my flock, the flock of my pasture are men, and I am your God, saith Yahweh God.
Well, the flock of my pasture, man, that's Adam, that word. And I am your God. I mean, the flock of my pasture of Adam. They're not of any other race, and I am your God. So he's telling us that these sheep, all along, he was speaking about the children of Israel, right? And I am your God.
And they shall not bear the shame of the heathen anymore. So right now, we're bearing the shame of the heathen because all these non-whites are afflicting us for our sins.
Yeah, right. And just to have them around us and partakers in our governments and our workplaces and our goods, that's a fucking shame. Yeah, there's not much more of a shame than that. It's pitiful that you got to go to a supermarket and compete with a nigger for a steak in the supermarket counter, in the butcher counter. It's pitiful that you got to deal with a Chinese cashier or something like, yeah, right? This whole world's a wreck. Bearing the shame of the heathen. I mean, this had like an ancient application, an ancient fulfillment in the Assyrian and the Babylonian, but the fulfillment today is a lot more striking and a lot more drastic. It's a wow. We go out to eat and we see niggers in a restaurant and we just want to leave. I mean, that's a shame, right? I mean, it's just disgusting having them around all the time.
And you know, like that date goes to a non-white, what good's it going to do? Because non-whites are worthless. But that steak goes to a white man, he's sustained himself for another day and he can produce something good.
Right.
So it's sad, it is.
Absolutely.
And then that verse at 27, it says, served themselves of them. So that's like feeding on their holy mountain. You can cross-reference that to Obadiah. The hot feeding themselves from the holy mount, fed on on my holy mountain, I think it says in Obadiah.
Yes, absolutely. So when we come to peaceful terms with God, only then will he cause the evil beast to cease out of the land. But apparently now that's only going to happen when Babylon falls, right? We might be stuck with these niggers for a while.
And verse 6 is the word blood, but it's really bloodshed.
What verse is that?
6.
Oh, you're already all the way back in 6. I don't see that.
Are you in the next chapter? You're in the next chapter. Slow down.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
I will be right back. I'm sorry, gentlemen. I got to excuse myself for a minute. But, Joe, you can come answer 35 if there are no other questions about 34.
Yeah, no worries. Does anyone have anything to say about 34?
No, I just have to keep stepping away. So I will be back. I'll ask.
Yeah, no worries. Come back. I'm going to read 35 then. Moreover, the word of Yahweh came unto me, saying, Son of man, set thy face against Mount Seir and prophesy against it, and say unto it, Thus saith Yahweh God, Behold, O Mount Seir, I am against thee, and I will stretch out mine hand against thee, and I will make thee most desolate. I will lay thy cities waste, and thou shalt be desolate, and thou shalt know that I am Yahweh. Because thou hast had a perpetual hatred and has shed the blood of the children of Israel by the force of the sword in the time of their calamity, in the time that their iniquity had an end. Therefore, as I live, saith Yahweh God, I will prepare thee unto blood, and blood shall pursue thee, sith thou hast not hated blood, even blood shall pursue thee. Thus will I make Mount Seir most desolate, and cut off from it him that passeth out and him that returneth. And I will fill his mountains with his slain men, in thy hills and in thy valleys, and in all the in all thy rivers shall they fall that are slain with the sword. I will make thee perpetual desolations, and thy cities shall not return, and ye shall know that I am Yahweh. Because thou hast said, these two nations and these two countries shall be mine, and we will possess it, whereas the Yahweh was there. Therefore, as I live, saith Yahweh God, I will even do according to thine anger and according to thine envy, which thou hast used out of thy hatred against them. And I will make myself known among them when I have judged thee. And thou shalt know that I am Yahweh, and that I have heard all thy blasphemies which thou hast spoken against the mountains of Israel, saying, they are laid desolate, they are given us to consume. Thus with your mouth ye have boasted against me, and have multiplied your words against me. I have heard them. Thus saith Yahweh God, when the whole earth rejoiceth, I will make thee desolate. As thou didst at the inheritance of the house of Israel, because it was desolate, so will I do unto thee. Thou shalt be desolate, O Mount Seir, and all Idumea, even all of it, and they shall know that I am Yahweh. So when the whole world rejoiceth, Edom will be made desolate. So I'm thinking the world here is the children of Israel, and this is the time when the Jews are made desolate. They're gone for good. This is the final judgment, I'm thinking.
Well, right. I would equate this both to what happened after the deportations of Israel and Judah were completed, which is when the Edomites had actually made this their land, right? These two nations and these two countries shall be mine, and we will bless it. That's what the Edomites did. They didn't necessarily have to say those words, but that's what they did. Historically, they moved up into Israel and Judah during the Persian period, and probably even during the Babylonian period, before the end of the Babylonian Empire, because they were in league with the Babylonians when Jerusalem was destroyed. And that's in 1 Ezra chapter 4, and it's in the Psalms, that the Edomites were actually the ones that had raised the temple. Psalm 137:7, remember, O Lord, the children of Edom in the day of Jerusalem, who said, raise it, even to the foundation thereof. Well, evidently the Edomites were subject to the Babylonians, of course, and they were willing participants in the destruction of Jerusalem. And they were responsible for raising the temple according to the 137th Psalm. And the fourth chapter of 1 Ezra supports that. So they must have had a political reward in being able to move into that land and fill the vacant land with their own people, with the Edomites. And then when you get to Josephus, 500 years later, he fills that in as a historical perspective. He fills that in. There's Edomites in Dor, there's Edomites in Marisha or Marisa, as he calls it in Greek, and there's Edomites all over ancient Judea, occupying cities in ancient Judea that the Maccabees actually went out and forcibly converted. So the beginning of the what we claim about the Judeans being Edomites, the beginning of the documentation is right here in Ezekiel chapter 35. And the end of that documentation is Paul of Tarsus with Josephus in between. That's how I look at it. And Strabo, who said in book 16 of his geography that the Edomites and the Judeans were all mixed up together, living in Judea with the same laws and customs. And that's exactly what Strabo said. So if they had the same laws and customs, that means the Edomites were Jews. just like Josephus said. And this is the beginning of that documentation. And this is very important because I don't see how any Judeo-tard pastor can deny this, but they do.
And like the Edomites even say, and we will possess it. So that might mean like they're going to possess the history and the identity of that nation.
Yeah, they took it all, right?
Hey, Bill, where it says in verse 12, it says, I have heard all thy blasphemies which thou hast spoken against the mountains of Israel. Like, how can you blaspheme against, like, isn't blasphemy cursing God or something like that? So how can you blaspheme against the mountains of Israel, which would be the people?
Well, you could blaspheme people, but that isn't necessarily a mortal crime, right?
Oh, okay. You know, I see.
But for me to blaspheme you is to treat you with utter contempt and take you for naught, right? I mean, that is a sort of blaspheme. That's what people do to God. Of course, blaspheming God is a lot more severe a crime than blaspheming men. But if you tell me the truth about something and I say, go fuck yourself, Joe, you're lying. Well, I'm basically blaspheming you, right? I mean... And only God could really sort it out in the end.
Yeah, it's contempt, right? Scorn.
Right, but to blaspheme somebody is to treat them with contempt, to spit in their faces, more or less. That's what you're doing to God when you blaspheme him. I mean, in blaspheme in the Oxford language is different dictionaries to speak irreverently about God or sacred things, but that's not the right definition. Blasphemy is to speak about anything badly, irreverently.
Yeah. Yeah, the church has kind of just tried to own that word over time, I'm sure.
Yeah, right. But I mean, if Joe comes and tells me something and gives his honest perspective and I say, get the fuck out of here, you're full of shit, I'm basically blaspheming him. He tried to help me and I told him and I treated him irreverently and in an incivil manner. That's basically a blasphemy. But Joe doesn't have the authority to punish me like God does, right? So, I mean, you could blaspheme God in that same manner when you just take God for naught and reject his word, you're blaspheming him. So, yeah, it's a much greater crime when we do it to God, but it's still a crime when we do it to one another. And if you read the parable of the sheep and the goats, if we do it to one another, we're really doing it to him.
I know in the New Testament, when Christ was on the cross, it says that the rabbis came, you know, and blasphemed him. And I thought, well, that's because Christ is God.
Right. But from the rabbi's perspective, he wasn't.
I think I was using the English definition as well, whereas I should have checked a Bible definition. See, in English, it has a different connotation because of the church and stuff, I'm thinking. Yeah, it's like when people try and go to an English dictionary to prove something about the Bible, and you're like, why are you using an English dictionary? You have to use a Bible dictionary to go back to the Hebrew. So I think that's what I was doing too.
Yeah, I actually check all these words in a whole host of dictionaries when I'm inquiring about them. I'll go back to the Latin and Greek roots if I have to.
In verse 5, where it says, because thou hast had a perpetual hatred and hast shed the blood of the children of Israel by the force of sword in the times of their calamity, in the time of their iniquity, had an end. So, meaning that basically that the Edomites were basically, you know, like a rod to humble us with. But once Israel had turned from its iniquity, and they still kept on doing it, that's what brought down Yahweh's wrath upon the Edomites.
Well, then verse 5 supports what the 137th Psalm says about the Edomites burning the temple.
I think where it says, in the time that their iniquity had an end, I think that could also mean like God was, he didn't punish them straight away. He gave them time to repent. Well, when their iniquity had an end, that means that, I think that means that that's the time when God judges them. Like he's like, you've had time to repent, now comes the judgment. That might be what an end means. You know, he postponed judgment. He didn't, when Israel sinned, he didn't destroy Israel straight away. He postponed judgment and postponed the sentence until he actually died in their place. Yeah. He didn't destroy Israel. So that might be what in end means.
Yeah, so he's talking to the Edomites, and he's talking about how they had a perpetual hatred and that they had shed the blood of the children of Israel by the force of the sword and in the time of their calamity. In the time of their in the time that their iniquity had an end, so meaning that the children of Israel had ended their iniquity, and they're still screwing with them, and that's why God took care of the Edomites.
I went to NASB. Like I agree with you, but it says. It translated, I will give you, where is it? 36. Therefore, blood. What verse is it? In their calamity, out the time of their of the punishment of the end. Out the time of the punishment of the end. Yeah, 35, yeah. Verse 5. So it translates it, out the time of the punishment of the end. So that's what makes me think that this is, that iniquity had an end means that their iniquity was being judged at that time. And so while their iniquity was being judged and they're at their lowest, the Edomites
how did it say it in the ASV?
In the NASB, it said, out the time of the punishment of the end. And in the AMP, it says, when they were suffering their final punishment.
Which verse is this, Joe? I'm sorry.
5?
I was looking up something else.
Verse 35, verse 5. And it in the KJV, it says, in the time that their iniquity had an end. And Martin thinks that means that they had stopped sinning because their iniquity had an end.
They can't stop sinning, right? But no, it's look at that word had is added there. And there were no indefinite articles in Greek, so the "an" is added.
Yeah, but there have been times when Israel has turned back to Yahweh and that they've received, you know, some
you know what, Mark?
Some graces, right?
If you look at the, it's the highest peak or the goal, the highest peak, probably the best way it's translated.
Highest peak
in the NAS.
What are you talking about?
Well, what Joe is saying is when their iniquity was at its worst, and when I'm looking at the NAS concordance, it's saying goal, highest peak, furthest border. That's the Strong's number there. 7083 for Kesh came to an end.
It's 7093, though.
Sorry, I don't have my glasses on.
Yeah, it's 7093.
It's cats, and it just means end. Punishment. That word, iniquity, could be iniquity or punishment or guilt. It's singular. In. Distress, calamity, in the time. In the time of calamity. In the time of the iniquity of the end. I mean, it's difficult. It's very ambiguous the way it's constructed.
Yeah, that's why.
Even if it said that their punishment had ended, right? It would have ended because they had you know, because there wasn't anything else to punish them for, right?
I don't think it means their punishment has ended. I think it means that this is the time when God's going to judge their iniquity. That's why it says their iniquity has an end, because this is, you know, God's not postponing the judgment anymore.
But he's talking to the Edomites. Because thou, meaning the Edomites, right?
Yeah, no, he's not talking about the Edomites, because it says blood of the children of Israel by the fort in the time because of that, their calamity. The children of Israel, their calamity,
correct,
their
correct,
iniquity.
Yeah. But
Greek Septuagint actually says in the time of iniquity at the end, and Brenton translates that in the time of injustice at the last, right?
Yeah, like the word.
You know what? There's a number of possibilities with this, because I'm seeing.
I don't think so. Because look.
Don't know what it. Okay, what do you think, David?
Well, look at the word before it. 5771. Their iniquity, right? So that's translating in NASB as their blame. So it's saying their blame comes to its highest peak. So it's when they're sinning at their highest.
This highest peak. I don't know where the heck you're getting that from.
Look at 7093.
In a Bible dictionary.
Yeah.
What do you see?
I'm looking at it. It's ket or kets, and it means end, at an end of time, end of space. Yeah.
Furthest peak. Yeah. Okay. But I think it has a colloquial.
I'm not seeing anything about a furthest peak or anything
like
that.
Yeah. I'm not saying it's an extremity. A related word contracted is an extremity. Maybe that's.
I'm just using the NASBs. I don't know.
Yeah. But which Bible dictionary are you using?
So Yahweh is talking to the Edomites, right? He's addressing them for what they had done to the Israelites. And he's specifically saying that basically, you know, because you were messing with them, and not only were you messing with them, but you were messing with them either that that the iniquity should stop, or that it had stopped and that they were still screwing with them.
No, because they want you to sin, and it's saying even when they're at their peak of sinning, they're still killing them.
I'm not following you.
Well, I'm using Strong's, right? So, I mean, if you look at the various definitions of it, of both
words. When you say that they want us to sin, right?
Yeah, Jews want us to sin.
Yeah,
and
but
even
it's
when
saying,
we sin, they still hate us.
But it's not talking about their want for us to sin. What it's talking about here is that they were slaying, that they were shedding the blood of the children.
Okay, well, look at 5771. The word leading up to the word that we're talking about, kesh.
Iniquity. Okay, iniquity.
Yeah.
Well, let me say the kets, I don't see where in Brown Driver Briggs or in Strong's or in the way that it is translated in the Septuagint or in Latin, which is extreme, in Latin, which is the extreme. I don't see where it could mean the peak. It always means like the end. Like in a terminal end.
I don't know. I have farthest, highest peak, interval, course.
Well, highest, but not because of the iniquities peaked, but because in that perspective, in that context, the highest would be the furthest away. It means the end. It doesn't mean the height.
Okay, so it's saying what Martin is saying, that even when they smartened up, but they hate us when we are sinning less, right?
Really believe that this is talking about their iniquity ending. It's not talking about their iniquity ending. It's talking about their judgment, the judgment of their iniquity being at the end.
Yeah, that's the way I read it.
And they're still shedding the blood of Israel at that time, and that's what he's referring to.
Yeah, that's what I believe it's referring to. It's not that their iniquity is going to end. There are other words for that.
Yeah.
No, I don't think that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying the opposite, right? But I think you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's not talking about the height of their iniquity either, even though we think it's there. But every year it gets worse or higher.
So he's going to lay their cities to waste. That's the important thing. and it's going to happen.
This is how I see it.
I just think that if they were still horrible and they were still you know sinning profusely, that he would let the Edomites have the way with them and even more.
Yeah,
I prefer the NAS translation here over the KJV. The KJV has so many added words and it's bullshit. They made a lie out of it. Just to get that in there.
So if you look at 4 and 5 together, it's saying, I'm going to lay their cities to waste, meaning the Edomites, at the time when the calamity of the Israelites is at an end. And that's it.
I see it as God was now judging the Israelites, and they were in sore judgment, and the Edomites saw that as an opportunity to take their cities. And God saying, you know, while the Israelites are under judgment, you thought you could take their cities? That's wrong, you know. And
right.
So they never see. Okay, I see. That's why you said, but we never stop sinning. I get it. Okay.
In any event, I would match this up with Obadiah.
Shall I start 36? Are we ready to?
Actually, yes, 36 is fine.
Ezekiel 36. Also, thou son of man, prophesy unto the mountains of Israel, and say, ye mountains of Israel, hear the word of Yahweh. Thus saith Yahweh God, because the enemy hath said against you, aha, even the ancient high places are ours in possession. Therefore prophesy and say, thus saith Yahweh God, because they have made you desolate and swallowed you up on every side, that you may be a possession unto the residue of the heathen, and ye are taken up in the lips of talkers and are in infamy of the people. Therefore, ye mountains of Israel, hear the word of Yahweh God. Thus saith Yahweh God to the mountains and to the hills, to the rivers and to the valleys, to the desolate waste and to the cities that are forsaken, which became a prey and derision to the residue of the heathen that are round about. Therefore, thus saith Yahweh God, surely in the fire of my jealousy have I spoken against the residue of the heathen, and against all Edomia, which have appointed my land into their possession with the joy of all their heart, with despiteful minds, to cast it for a prey. Prophecy, therefore, concerning the land of Israel, and say unto the mountains, and to the hills, to the rivers, and to the valleys, thus saith Yahweh God, behold, I have spoken in my jealousy and in my fury, because ye have borne the shame of the heathen. Therefore, thus saith Yahweh God, I have lifted up mine hand. Surely the heathen that are about you, they shall bear their shame. But ye, O mountains of Israel, ye shall shoot forth your branches and yield your fruit to my people of Israel, for they are at hand to come. For behold, I am for you, and I will turn unto you, and ye shall be tilled and sown, and I will multiply men upon you, all the house of Israel, even all of it, and the city shall be inhabited, and the waste shall be builded, and I will multiply upon you man and beast, and they shall increase and bring fruit, and I will settle you after your old estates, and will do better unto you than at your beginnings, and ye shall know that I am Yahweh. Yea, I will cause men to walk upon you, even my people Israel, and they shall possess thee, and thou shalt be their inheritance, and thou shalt no more henceforth bereave them of men. Thus saith Yahweh God, because they say unto you, thou land devourest up men, and hath bereaved thy nations, therefore thou shalt devour men no more, neither bereave thy nations any more, saith Yahweh God. Now, verse 6, we have the shame of the heathen. We have borne the shame of the heathen. So that's what we're bearing now. That's the same as, I think it was in chapter 34, the shame of the heathen, the punishment of having the heathen in our nations and afflicting us. So that's there again.
Yeah, that's right with Edom, right?
Yeah, they're the ones who are afflicting us. They're the shame that we're bearing, these Jews. We have to bear them. Kind of reminds me of what, was it Codronel? Is that how you say it? How he said a country has the Jews it deserves?
Yes. He's right. He was right about that. I mean, if you think about the United States, and first we fought the Civil War. So a bunch of white men killed each other over niggers. And then whites really started to take to idolatry around the same time, with things like vaudeville and burlesque and the gambling halls and all the other distractions that became really popular in the Gilded Age, which is the end of the 1800s, the end of the 19th century. And at that same time, we became flooded with Jews from Southern and Eastern Europe. They started to pour in here in the 1880s. And by 1914, and I have this in documentation, by 1914, Jews were 25% of the population in New York City, which is like a million Jews at that time. And they've been expanding ever since. They were in a lot of other cities besides New York, of course. Savannah, Georgia, Charleston, South Carolina. They were in Texas. That they had a big port in Texas. The name of it might come to me in a minute. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Charleston. That's the headquarters for the Freemasons in America. But it's funny you say that. They came from Eastern Europe in the late 1800s, because that's the time when the czars were doing pogroms against them. And then they ended up coming to New York and financing the communist revolution against the czar.
Right.
And then
it was Galveston, Texas, is the town. It was a big port of entry for Jews in the late 19th century. But there's plenty of them in New Orleans, too, that they were before that.
Verse 4 has cities that are forsaken. I'm wondering if, like, cities at the edges of Israel were forsaken first and given up to the enemy or something. Or perhaps all of Israel just felt forsaken. Oh, you know what? It's probably the deportations, those cities that are forsaken, which became a prey. So then the Edomites move in, I guess.
Well, that's exactly what they did. I'm sorry, which verse is this? 36:14?
4.
36:4. Right.
So there's like cities which are becoming a prey.
The city which became a prey.
And that are forsaken.
Yeah. And they were the cities that were left vacant by the Israelites or Judah. And take it over by the Edomians. That's how I read that.
Okay.
And the two most notable cities are Dor and Marissa, but that's because Josephus made the first mention of them forcibly converting Edomites were in Dor and Marishah. It's called Marishah in the Old Testament, but it's Marissa in Josephus. And they were notable cities in the Old Testament. And one was in Israel and one was in Judah. Dor was in the land of Manasseh. And Marishah was in Judah. And Josephus talked explicitly about the forced conversion of the Edomites in those cities by John Hyrcanus. But then later on by Alexander Janneus, he actually forcibly converted many more Edomites than Hyrcanus had. But all of that had occurred by 76 BC at the absolute latest, and of course probably perhaps before that, 10 or 20 years before that, because Alexander Janius actually ruled a long time. I think he ruled from like, I might be wrong, but I think it was from 110 BC to 76 BC. He had a long rule. And during that time, just about all the Edomites in Judea were converted to Judaism. Continuing the policy of John Hyrcanus. And these chapters are the Edomites that Alexander Janius and John Hyrcanus converted 400 years later. A little more than 400 years, actually. 450 years. Going from about 585 BC to about 125 BC, that's 560 years. I'm sorry, 460 years. Yeah, I can't add. It's a long time.
And so does verse 14 tie into that, Bill? I'm not sure what it means where it says, therefore thou shalt devour no men no more. Is that talking about the Edomite nation, like devouring other nations, or is that talking about like the injustice that Jerusalem was doing against, you know, because it had become an unjust place with all these? Yeah, I don't know what that means at verse 14. Therefore thou shalt devour men no more. The land, thou land, at verse 13, it says, thou land devourest up men. Has that got something to do with the, what you're talking about, the Edomites taking over cities?
No, the land of Israel was taken over in verse 6, right? And, but ye, O mountains of Israel, ye shall shoot forth your branches. That's talking about the people, I believe. I will multiply men upon you. I would read that as I would multiply men for you and not upon you.
So this is a blessing.
Yeah, I believe so.
At verse 11. Yeah, I will cause men to walk upon you. So that's a blessing at verse 12.
Neither will I cause men to hear thee in the shame of the heathen anymore. Neither shalt thou bear the reproach of the people anymore. Neither shalt thou cause thy nations to fall anymore. When the house of Israel dwelt in their own land, they defiled it by their own way and by their doings. Their way was before me as the uncleanness of a removed woman. That means a menstruous woman. So therefore thou shalt devour men no more, neither bereave thy nations anymore.
I'm thinking this is the sins of Israel.
Yeah, will cause men to walk upon you, even my people Israel, and they shall possess thee, and thou shalt be their inheritance, and thou shalt no more henceforth bereave them. Thus saith Yahweh God, because they say unto you, thou land devourest up men and has bereaved thy nations. Wow. That might be pretty profound if I really sit and think about this. Therefore thou shalt devour men no more, neither bereave thy nations anymore, saith Yahweh God. Neither will I cause men to hear in thee the shame of the heathen anymore. You know, I would really have to examine every damn Hebrew word here. Because it seems
it seems like
it's flip-flopping, like it's confused. It really is.
Maybe if I keep reading, it'll add some context to it. I'm going to read from 17, which is just after these verses. So I think I read 16. 17. Son of man, when the house of Israel dwelt in their own land, they defiled it by their own way and by their doings. Their way was before me as the uncleanness of a removed woman. Wherefore I poured my fury upon them for the blood that they had shed upon the land and for their idols wherewith they had polluted it. And I scattered them among the heathen, and they were dispersed through the countries. According to their way and according to their doings, I judged them. And when they entered unto the heathen, whither they went, they profaned my holy name when they said to them, these are the people of Yahweh, and are gone forth out of his land. I had pity for mine holy name, which the house of Israel had profaned among the heathen, whither they went. Therefore say unto the house of Israel, thus saith Yahweh God, I do not do this for your sakes, O house of Israel, but for mine holy name's sake, which ye have profaned among the heathen, whither ye went. And I will sanctify my great name, which was profaned among the heathen, which ye have profaned in the midst of them. And the heathen shall know that I am Yahweh, saith Yahweh God, when I shall be sanctified in you before their eyes. For I will take you from among the heathen and gather you out of all countries, and will bring you into your own land. Then will I sprinkle clean water upon you, and ye shall be clean from all your filthiness, and from all your idols will I cleanse you. A new heart also will I give you, and a new spirit will I put within you. And I will take away the stony heart out of your flesh, and I will give you an heart of flesh. And I will put my spirit within you, and cause you to walk in my statutes, and ye shall keep my judgments and do them.
I'm going to back up to verse 8. But ye, O mountains of Israel, ye shall shoot forth your branches and yield your fruit to my people Israel, for they are at hand to come. In other words, the fruits are at hand to come. So you're going to give them to the people of Israel. For behold, I am for you, and I will turn unto you, and ye shall be tilled and sown, meaning that the mountains of Israel will be fruitful, and I will multiply blessed men, the word Adam, upon you, at all the house of Israel, even all of it, and the city shall be inhabited, and waste places shall be built. I wouldn't translate that as upon you. And I
these
will
are all blessings.
It could be upon, on, above, over, against. It's a very general preposition. You. It could be on behalf of, or beside you, or in addition to you, or together with you. So on account of you. So because the word is Adam, I will multiply men on account of you. In other words, the men of Israel will be multiplied. That's how I would understand that. It's a positive statement and not a negative one. And I will multiply upon you man and beast, and they shall increase and bring fruit, and I will settle you after your old estates, and will do better unto you than at your beginnings, and ye shall know that I am Yahweh. That's all blessings in verses 8, 9, 10, and 11. Yeah, I will cause men, Adam, to walk upon you, even my people Israel. So the men are my people Israel. The men walking upon you, because he's addressing the mountains of Israel, are my people Israel, and they shall possess thee, and thou shalt remember their inheritance, and shall no more henceforth bereave them. Okay. So it's all positives for Israel. Verse 13. Thus saith Yahweh God. I'm sorry.
It turns at verse 13. It seems to turn at verse 13.
Thus saith Yahweh God, because they say unto you, thou land devourest up men and hast bereaved thy nations. But this is addressing the mountains of Israel. So it's kind of weird.
And at verse 18, it says, wherefore I poured my fury upon you for the blood that they shed upon the land. So it seems from verse 13 and continuing on through verse 18, it's talking about the sins of Israel. And the bad things they did. So to verse 12, it's talking about the blessings, and then verse 13, it seems to talk about the sins.
But I'm not sure. I'm saying what he's going to do to them on account of the sins. Neither will I cause men to hear and need the shame of the heathen anymore. Neither shall thou bear the reproach of the people anymore. Neither shall thou cause thy nations to fall anymore, saith Yahweh God. That's not necessarily a condemnation. That sounds like a deliverance from those sins.
Okay.
Moreover, the word of Yahweh came unto me, saying, Son of man, when the house of Israel, when it's talking about past times, when they dwelt in their own land, they defiled it by their own way and by their doings. Their way was before me as the uncleanness of a removed or menstruous woman. For that reason, I poured my fury upon them for the blood that they had shed upon the land and for their idols. So that's talking about the past. And I scattered them among the heathen or the nations, and they were dispersed through the countries according to their way, according to their doings, I judged them. That's the past, because they're already scattered by this time. And when they entered unto the heathen, whither they went, they profaned my holy name when they said to them, these are the people of Yahweh and are gone forth out of his land. That it's talking about the Israelites who already went into captivity long ago. But I had put pity for my holy name, which the house of Israel had profaned among the heathen wherever they went. Therefore, say unto the house of Israel, thus saith Yahweh God, I do not this for your sakes, O house of Israel, but for my holy name's sake, which ye have profaned among the heathen wherever you went, whither you went. So Israel's already in captivity, and he's addressing them there in that manner. So the focus has shifted away from the land of Israel to the people themselves who were in captivity.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I get it now. Yeah, he's talking about the past time. He's like explaining to them. Yeah.
He's explaining to them the past, and then he's promising them that they will be cleansed in verses 24 and 25 and given a new heart and new spirit. And I see that as the coming of the Christian gospel to them, right? I will put my spirit within you, and you shall dwell in the land that I gave to your fathers, which isn't necessarily Palestine.
Well, we haven't read that yet, Bill. I think we got to heart of flesh. So,
okay.
Read from 27, and then we can. And I will put my spirit within you and cause you to walk in my statutes, and ye shall keep my judgments and do them. And ye shall dwell in the land that I gave to your fathers, and ye shall be my people, and I will be your God. I will also save you from all your uncleanness, and I will call for the corn and will increase it, and lay no famine upon you. And I will multiply the fruit of the tree and the increase of the field, that ye shall receive no more reproach of famine among the heathen. Then shall ye remember your own evil ways and your doings that were not good, and shall loathe yourselves in your own sight for your iniquities and for your abominations. Not for your sakes do I do this, saith Yahweh God. Be it known unto you, be ashamed and confounded for your own ways, O house of Israel. Thus saith Yahweh God, in the day that I shall have cleansed you from all your iniquities, I will also cause you to dwell in the cities, and the waste shall be builded, and the desolate land shall be tilled, whereas it lay desolate in the sight of all that passed by. And they shall say, this land that was desolate is become like the Garden of Eden, and the waste and desolate and ruined cities are become fenced and are inhabited. Then the heathen that are left round about you shall know that I, Yahweh, build the ruined places and plant that was desolate. I, Yahweh, have spoken it, and I will do it.
So when the Jews and the Arabs who were left round about the land of Israel at one time saw Europe become a thriving, prosperous place, that's when this was fulfilled.
It's like a Garden of Eden.
Yeah.
No, Nick. It's pure white. And yeah.
For a while.
Yeah.
A while.
And Yahweh makes, you know, the desolate places. So Europe was a desolate place, and it was builded.
So what we have here is my sheep went over every mountain in chapter 34. And then in chapter 35, at the beginning of chapter 36, we have the story of the Edomites taking over the land of Israel. And at the end of chapter 36, we have a message of reconciliation for the sheep that wandered over every mountain that are in captivity, that are not in Israel. And condemnation for those that are in Israel, the Edomites.
I'll read the last two verses. Thus saith Yahweh God, I will yet for this be inquired of by the house of Israel to do it for them. I will increase them with men like a flock, as the holy flock, as the flock of Jerusalem in a solemn feast. So shall the waste cities be filled with flocks of men, and they shall know that I am Yahweh.
There you have it.
You want to do chapter 37, Bill, unless anyone has questions?
I would personally rather leave it because it fits better with 38 and 39, I think. That's my opinion.
No, it was good. We got through those three chapters, and they're all connected, so.
Yeah, they are definitely all connected. They tell the same story. The sheep wandered over every mountain. The Edomites came in and occupied the land, and they're going to be condemned. And then Yahweh addresses the sheep who were in captivity and recounts their sins to them. And promises them reconciliation.
It is a lot like the story of America or anywhere. Like America's first built as like a Garden of Eden, and then the Jews start coming over.
Yeah, right. Fucked it all disconnected up. From your channel. Brought the niggers with them, and wow. Then they open the floodgates to the Spics and the Chinks, and now it's just a mess. You can't get gas without dealing with the Sand Nigger.
And that's what it's calling it here. It's calling it the shame of the heathen.
Yep.
In these chapters. And it definitely
is. Yeah, but Europe's
is.
Under it too. It's not just America, even Australia. And yet, you know, I consider Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, peripheral, but there's still a part of us suffering, in some cases, suffering much worse.
Yeah, it's definitely the same thing. We're definitely got the shame of them here.
Yeah, you got to deal with drunken abos that are probably dumber than a typical American street nigger, but that's hard to imagine.
It is hard to imagine, but it's true.
Yeah. And it's hard to imagine anything could be dumber than a fucking typical Walmart shibu.
I don't know if that's possible.
Oh, I've seen too many videos of those abos. They're pretty damn dumb.
They're primitive as hell. Have you seen the accommodations and stuff, David? There's a thread at Christigenia. There's a thread at Christigenia where white tradesmen have to come in and fix up abo accommodations, and they're laughing the whole time.
Yeah, the abo's just trash. They're given houses, and they're just trashing them. American niggers do the same thing. They just trash everything they're given.
Yeah.
Do American Negroes sniff petrol?
They don't have to anymore, but they did.
They did? Oh, okay. Well, then maybe they are like abos.
That's something that the Red Indians did more commonly, I'd say, than the niggers here.
Indian sniff petrol.
Yeah, they were famous for that in Canada, or infamous, I guess.
User entered your channel.
They're all the